This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Randall Archibald, wrote yesterday's front-page New York Times story about how Mexican drug cartels have extended their reach across the U.S. Archibald is a national correspondent for the New York Times. He covers the Southwest and the Mexican-American border. A little later, we'll discuss the new border security initiative announced today by Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. Randall Archibald, welcome to Fresh Air. In February, Attorney General Eric Holder called Mexico's drug trafficking organizations a national security threat to the United States. In what ways has it become a security threat to our country?
Well, I think what he was referring to was the spread of the Mexican drug cartels and their operatives and various affiliates to various places in the United States. In December, the Justice Department put out a report that identified 230 U.S. cities that had the presence of a Mexican drug trafficking organization, whether that was a cell, as they call it, of a cartel, or a homegrown drug trafficking organization distributing their cocaine and marijuana and other illicit drugs. In addition to that, there are several cities that are becoming alarmed at what they see as a spike in drug crime and drug-related crime, including Tucson, where I was recently. That's had a wave of home invasions that the police suspect and have, in some cases, have proven are drug-related. And they believe it's sort of a shockwave from the chaos that's going on in Mexico now with the crackdown on the four major cartels and all the bloodshed on that side.
You say about 60% of the drugs coming from Mexico to the United States go through Arizona. So is the whole state being affected by this?
When you say the whole state, you have to remember that at the border, drug seizures are a regular occurrence for the Border Patrol and for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. In addition, Tucson and Phoenix serve as sort of hubs for the transfer of the drugs once they're in Arizona to various parts of the United States. The freeways are very conducive. There's a lot of north-south, east-west routes. It's a little bit of ways from the border, so there may not be, particularly in the case of Phoenix, there may not be such a heavy Border Patrol presence. So geographically, it's sort of well-suited, in a way, for the transfer and transportation of drugs to other parts of the country.
Since Arizona is a border state, I understand why Arizona has become a hub for drug trafficking from Mexico. But you write in your story this week that Atlanta has become a new staging ground for Mexican drug traffickers. Why Atlanta?
Well, if you've ever been through the Atlanta airport, then you know that it's a very large airport with a lot of connections to the rest of the United States. In a similar vein, the drug traffickers have discovered that Atlanta, geographically, and the infrastructure, the freeway system, likewise, is very conducive to moving drugs either coming up through Florida, the sort of older traditional way, and also through the Southwest. Again, through Atlanta, you can get almost anywhere. You can go right up the eastern seaboard to the thriving drug markets up north. You can go to other pockets of the South. Can get to the Midwest. You know, Atlanta, a lot of businesses are located there for that very same reason. And likewise, the DEA, you know, over and over will tell you these cartels are really organized like a well-organized, you know, FedEx or Walmart distribution system.
In what sense do they compare?
Well, in that they have a, you know, very sort of organized command structure in Mexico. In the case of marijuana, it's grown there, it's bundled there, it's shipped north. In the case of cocaine, most of the cocaine still comes from South America. And they have allegiances with the South American cartels to move the cocaine through Mexico. And the reason for that is in large part because the United States has had some success in cutting off the Caribbean and South Florida. You will remember the Miami Vice days.
Yes.
Of yesteryear. Well, you know, as a result, you know, there was really a lot of heat applied to South Florida and the Caribbean, you know, using the Coast Guard and military resources to spot and track ships and the various planes coming in. It's not completely cut off there, but it's certainly had a significant impact. And what it did was it forced the Colombian cartels to make alliances with the Mexicans to move the cocaine through Mexico, where there are established smuggling routes for marijuana and other products. Likewise, methamphetamine used to be in the United States. Meth labs were proliferating everywhere, especially in rural areas. Now, as a result, you know, a lot of legislation went through prohibiting the sale of prescription medication that facilitated the production of methamphetamine. Those methamphetamine labs, while they haven't disappeared, they certainly have really dropped significantly in the United States and have shifted to Mexico in what they call quote-unquote super labs in Mexico that now produce it, and then the cartels ship it likewise through their routes up north.
Most of the guns that the Mexican cartels used are smuggled in from the United States. Mexico has really strict gun laws. What have you learned about how guns are bought in the United States and smuggled into Mexico?
Well, you're correct. The gun restrictions are very severe in Mexico, and outside of the black market, it's extremely difficult to get a gun in Mexico. On the U.S. side, we have laws that recognize the possession of a firearm is valid in some cases. So as a result, what happens is people go to gun shows or go to gun shops and buy them legitimately. You know, they submit their application and whatever is legally necessary. And what the cartels have done is line up what they call straw purchasers, which are basically people who have legitimate rights to buy a gun. They buy it legally and then turn it over to the smugglers and bring it into Mexico. So it's proven to be a very difficult phenomenon for the U.S. to really deal with.
Well, it's kind of paradoxical that the Mexican violence that's spilling over into the United States is being armed with American guns.
The American guns going south, like I said, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency estimates 90% of the guns used in Mexico's violence, which has now killed some 7,000 people since January 2008. The vast majority of them associated with the drug trade, but still that's a very high number. The ATF estimates 90% of those guns originated in the United States. So as the Arizona Attorney General put it, you know, we get the drugs, they get the guns and the cash. It's sort of a cyclical business in that sense.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Randall Archibald. He's a national correspondent for the New York Times. He covers the Southwest for the Times and has written extensively about the border. And we're talking about the Mexican drug wars spilling over into the United States. There was a congressional report recently that said there's evidence that the Mexican cartels are increasing their relationship with prison and street gangs in the United States. What have you heard about that?
That's something that the federal authorities are somewhat concerned about. You have to understand a little bit about how the drugs are distributed in the United States. The cartels, as I said before, the bosses, the so-called kingpins, tend to stay in Mexico. The sort of upper command tends to stay in Mexico, directing the growing of the marijuana, the acquiring of the cocaine, the shipment through the country, all that entails. Once it crosses into the U.S., as the Drug Enforcement Administration explains it, it's usually transferred to what they call cells. And these are groups, criminal organizations that operate either in local cities or on a regional basis that basically serve as sort of sub-distributors. And, you know, they kind of take it from the border. They take it from hubs like Phoenix and Atlanta and disperse it, you know, further on down the chain to get to middle and lower level dealers and distributors. That's where the street gangs tend to come in. I don't think there's complete agreement in the DEA on this. I spoke to a DEA agent who said he is a little skeptical about whether the cartels would really want to kind of get in bed with the street gangs, because the street gangs are a pretty volatile group. They could eventually become sort of rivals. So whereas other DEA officials believe that the cartels view the street gangs as a sort of logical place to go to help them spread their product further. The street gangs are already there. They're already mixed up in bad stuff. So I don't think there's complete agreement on that issue, but certainly they've picked up enough anecdotal and other intelligence to suggest that there are some connections being made.
Some experts are concerned that Mexico could become a failed state, and it would be very dangerous for the United States to have a failed state on its border. Have you heard many people expressing that concern?
There are certainly high-profile people expressing that concern. Barry McCaffrey, the former so-called drug czar under the Clinton administration, who directed the White House anti-drug policy group, recently visited Mexico and spoke to a lot of officials there and kind of collected his own intelligence and then put out a report recently where he warned of that very possibility. And there have been others who have followed suit or have had similar claims. The Mexicans, of course, are livid over this. They do not believe, while they clearly see the drug cartel problem is extremely serious, I don't think anyone there really goes and takes that extra step that, you know, the country is on the verge of collapse or on the verge of becoming a sort of Pakistan where leadership is very sort of unstable and there's all sort of questions. If you go to Mexico today, I was in Tijuana maybe a month or so ago. You could walk around Tijuana and actually be surprised. I mean, Tijuana is a very violent place for the drug business. There's certainly been a lot of grisly shootings and murders, attacks on police. But to walk around there, it doesn't really look like a place that is, you know, under siege, as you might say. People still go to the stores. They still go to the mall. They still go to restaurants. We went out to a restaurant at night, and there was, I wouldn't say it was packed, but there was a fair number of people there. It didn't have that sort of palpable feel of terror that people might expect from reading the headlines in the U.S. That said, like I said, it's a very serious place in terms of the drug business. I mean, you could end up in, you know, potentially dead if you work in that business in Tijuana. But I say that as sort of an indicator that while, yes, this is an extremely serious problem in Mexico, there isn't really sort of on the surface many signs that the country is headed, you know, so far downhill.
Do you think that the drug violence that has spilled over from Mexico across the border into the United States is related at all to the fact that in Mexico, the government of President Felipe Calderon has been trying to crack down on the cartels and their leaders?
Well, I think as a top-level Drug Enforcement Administration official told Congress the other day, spillover is sort of in his words, a tricky thing to define. Clearly, the Mexican government crackdown, coupled with the feuding among the cartels themselves, has produced this wave of bloodshed there. But whether that sort of high level of violence has spilled over into the U.S., I think most officials would say no, particularly along the border, you know, the border towns right on the border. That's what they're concerned about when you say spillover. They want to make sure that, you know, a running gun battle does not come breaking through a port of entry or through a gap in the fence or something like that. But the violence in Mexico, this sort of chaotic period going on among the cartels, I think a lot of U.S. law enforcement officials believe that there is sort of a shockwave emanating from that. And it's producing pressure on U.S. drug dealers on the U.S. side, drug trafficking organizations on the U.S. side, to not lose their drug loads, to not be very tolerant when a dealer says he came up short on cash or his load was confiscated. You know, I think it's partly that. I think if you ask the Tucson and Phoenix police, and DEA officials there, what they'll tell you is a lot of these local operators who have some, in some cases, loose affiliations or other sort of affiliations to the cartels are branching out their activities. They've discovered that, you know, it's much easier to rip off somebody's load than to be responsible for a load yourself. So there's this sort of branching out of activity going on among local players. There's a lot of trafficker-on-trafficker violence, as they call it. But even the DEA will say it's very difficult to establish a direct line between what's going on in Tucson and Phoenix, you know, straight back to the cartels.
Colombia used to be the country that seemed to be the big country for supply and for violence, particularly with cocaine. So how did Mexico take over a lot of the market?
Well, Colombia, as you said, was sort of the hot zone for this, as, you know, in terms of cocaine. Cocaine is the coca plant is grown there and other places in South America. The cartels in Medellin and Cali and other places were very powerful in shipping that to the U.S. But eventually Colombia and the United States together worked out a plan to really crack down and sort of really try to stomp them out. There was several million dollars spent. The U.S. sent a lot of resources, and it had an effect. And as a result, at least the shipment through South Florida and through the Caribbean was somewhat tamped down. Colombia went through a very, and is to some degree still going through a very bloody period, where the cartels reacted with, similarly, a wave of kidnappings, prominent politicians, judges assassinated, not to mention some of their leading cartel members were killed. So a lot of people say Mexico's, in an odd way, all the bloodshed there can be seen as a sort of success, that Mexico needs to go through this sort of period of real chaos and turmoil in relation to the drug trade before it can emerge on the other side as a more stable place, as a place where the cartels don't act with impunity. It should be noted that part of the plan with Colombia was to quote-unquote professionalize the police and military, basically really rooting out corruption and finding people who will take the job not because they know that they're going to get side payments from the cartels. Mexico still has a very serious problem with corruption seeping into the highest levels. So, like I said, whereas some U.S. officials see this as a sort of odd success, I know people don't like to attach the word success to so much carnage, but they see it as sort of a necessary evil before Mexico emerges and on the other side of them as a more stable place with a more professional police force and military.
My guest Randall Archibald wrote yesterday's front page story in the New York Times about how Mexican drug cartels have extended their reach into the U.S. The interview with him we've been listening to was recorded yesterday. This morning, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano announced a new border security initiative, so we called Archibald for an update. Randall, would you sum up for us the main points of the plan outlined today by Secretary Napolitano?
Yes, the administration has decided to send a sizable increase in the number of federal agents to the border to assist local and state authorities there and supplement the already sizable presence of federal agents that patrol the border and make sure that violence doesn't spread from south to north. They also announced, and this is, I think, very important for Mexico, the increased use of technology, X-ray technology, to inspect vehicles going south to help detect weapons going into Mexico. Something like 9 out of 10 of the weapons that have been used in the killings there have originated in the United States, and Mexico has long sought some sort of way for the U.S. to control that flow of guns.
Do you think that the Mexican government will be satisfied by this move as being sufficient to dramatically cut down on the number of guns being smuggled into Mexico from the United States?
I think they'll certainly welcome this. There isn't a lot of inspection of traffic going into Mexico. The U.S. certainly inspects very aggressively people coming out of Mexico and entering the U.S. at the ports of entry, but there isn't a lot of inspection going south, either in the United States or, for that matter, in Mexico. I think the Mexicans would further like the U.S. to do something about the sale of these guns, including assault weapons, but I think for now they would welcome any effort on the U.S. side that might impede or slow down that flow of weaponry.
So is it a situation where the Mexican government wants the United States to do more to cut down on gun sales and to prevent guns from being smuggled into Mexico, but the United States says that Mexico should do more on the border to inspect cars coming across the border into Mexico?
I think both sides would like to see that. Mexico traditionally has not done a lot of inspection. You have to remember, people coming into Mexico spend money, and you know, it's sort of an economic issue. They don't want to really do much to interfere with that. At the same time, Mexico has also done a fair amount, not in terms of inspection, but certainly sending their military to the border cities to help contain that violence. So both sides really are taking steps that they had not previously taken to deal with the drug war. But I think both sides would also ask the other to do more on a range of issues.
What are some of the things that are not addressed in the plan outlined by Secretary Napolitano?
Well, I think the sort of elephant in the room is the use of the U.S. military at the border, most likely through the National Guard. Secretary Janet Napolitano didn't really address that so much. She said that she would meet with Governor Rick Perry of Texas, who requested something like 1,000 or 2,000 National Guard troops at the border. This is something that the U.S. has previously done, but that was a couple of years ago to help the Border Patrol while the Border Patrol was building up a number of agents. And the National Guard troops didn't play really a direct role in apprehending people so much as doing supplementary work. So they left open the question of using the National Guard at this point, but President Obama and the Secretary have both said that they would consider it, and Secretary Napolitano is going to meet with the governor of Texas this week to discuss it further.
So does this strike you as a strong plan? Does it sound like it will really help cut down on the drug-related violence?
I think it's a step forward. Whether it's a strong plan or not, I think, you know, the devil is in the details, and really we'd have to see in exactly how the agents are deployed and how the technology is used and really what the success rate is of it. I mean, how many guns or cars do they stop and intercept and arrest and so forth? But it's clearly something that isn't really being done so much now. So in that regard, it's a step forward.
One thing I'm clear of is how much of the plan is about increasing security at the border for people crossing the border, and how much of it is about more law enforcement in border towns?
Well, I think the two are sort of interrelated. I think the main issue here at the border is that they don't want the, you know, really grisly killings and brutality to spill over directly into those border towns. I mean, that's the big concern in El Paso and Nogales and San Diego and right on the border. So anything that they can do to contain it, I think, is kind of the goal that they're shooting for. At the same time, I don't think they want cartel operatives to get any further into the U.S. than they already have.
Any final thoughts you want to leave us with about the issue of how Mexican drug violence has crossed over into the United States?
No, I mean, I think this is sort of almost a turning point of sorts. I mean, there's a lot of unprecedented things happening, both with this plan that they announced today, in terms of stepping up, you know, southbound searches, you know, Mexico's use of its military and resolve to really make a strong effort to stamp out the cartels is something that they haven't seen this aggressively in the past. So we're sort of in a moment that could be a turning point in the drug wars.
Randall Archibald, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Randall Archibald covers the Southwest for the New York Times. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, Jonathan Menjivar, John Myers, and John Sheehan. I'm Terry Gross.